You know, all these people keep asking us if we're doing a new episode of Film Bookcast, and we haven't really had an answer, but you know what? Yeah, I'm thinking we're recording a new episode of Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me, as always, is the Baba Yaga himself.
Mike DiCriccio.
How are you doing, Mike?
Good. Taking a break from being the boogeyman for approximately an hour or so.
Yeah, just
to hang out with you.
Just enough time to report on another boogeyman.
I'm excited. We have a pretty packed episode.
Yes, we do. And I'm doing pretty good as well, Mike. I've had a pretty weird couple of days. I don't know if you're aware of this, but I got into a Twitter fight with Piers Morgan.
Yeah. I mean, who hasn't, though?
Right. True. But it wasn't really a Twitter fight. It was more like I quoted one of his tweets, and for some reason he retweeted me.
Yeah, he picked on you.
Thereby giving me more attention than I would have had otherwise. I am somebody with less than 300 Twitter followers. He has 5.5 million.
No, but you're the enemy, though.
But anyway, during the Grammys the other day, you know, Beyonce performed, and Piers Morgan tweeted something about, like, how he didn't like Beyonce's performance, thought it was, like, narcissistic or whatever. This was the same weekend where he got into a huge fight with J.K. Rowling. And I thought it was so weird that he was taking aim at these two widely beloved people. Like,
yeah, he just wants any idol that the millennials have, he wanted to take down.
Yeah, exactly.
or try to take down.
It was super weird. So I kind of jokingly tweeted out. I quoted his tweet, and I said, with this tweet, Piers Morgan has won his hard-fought battle to become the most hated man on Twitter. Which I said kind of as a joke, right? Not,
sure.
Like, semi-joking.
You're not wrong, though.
I'm not wrong. That's the thing. But then Piers Morgan quoted my tweet and said, or the most honest. And then for the next day or two, I was getting mentions and mentions from all of his followers telling me what a piece of shit I am.
Wow.
But my tweet also spread a lot further than it would have otherwise. Like, again, I only have like 300 followers. I'm usually happy to get like 2 or 3 retweets.
Yeah.
On something. And I got upwards of like 50 on this one.
Wow.
Which is nice. It was nice to see. But I kept getting comments like, who is this Mike Smith guy? Who the fuck does he think he is? Piers is always right. This shitload is ridiculous. I can't bear Beyonce. Really appreciate the candor of Piers Morgan. Didn't you fake some pictures and get fired for nut or whatever? Like,
What?
It's very straight. Let's make Mike Nobody, the most hated person on Twitter, sad left-wing extremist.
That was actually from Pierce, from Donald Trump's Twitter account. That's weird.
That would not surprise me at all. One guy just tweeted at me, Beyonce is so 2010. So yeah, very, very strange couple of days. And then the next day I found out that a high school friend of mine got arrested for impersonating a cop.
What the fuck?
So it's just been a weird couple of days, man.
Luckily you had the joy and the escapism of John Wick Chapter 2 to fall back on.
Absolutely, yeah. So if you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, usually
what a segue.
Usually we don't start with these happenings, but I felt like I had to talk about it. It was so weird that it happened. But if you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, usually first we start with some film news, and then we move on into some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately. And then after that, we will move on to our featured review. This week, we are reviewing Piers Morgan's Twitter account. No, we are reviewing the new film from director Chad Stahelski and the sequel to 2014's John Wick. It's John Wick Chapter 2. Are you excited about this, Mike, as I am?
Yeah, I needed the reawakening in my life.
The reawakening. It was a great weekend this past weekend, you might say. But anyway, let's avoid all those bad puns entirely. Let's get into some film news.
Hi, it's time for...
What?
It's time for...
Let's get into some film news, Mike. And there was a lot of film news over the past few weeks. Some pretty big news. I would say probably the biggest news. Jack Nicholson, one of the great actors. Right? Yeah, he's a great...
Only if you pronounce it that way.
Exactly. You have to say actor when you discuss Jack Nicholson. Great actor, love Jack Nicholson, but he hasn't been in a movie in a very long time. Like,
yeah, I don't think I ever really realized that.
Yeah, it's not something. And the thing is, he wasn't really in retirement. He just was not choosing roles because he didn't feel like nothing stood out to him. Nothing was like super. He wasn't super into the scripts that he was getting. So he hasn't been in a movie since 2010's How Do You Know? So it's been 7 years since that movie with directed by James L. Brooks. He started in that with Paul Rudd, I believe. And so now he's emerging from this kind of retirement state to star in an English language remake of Tony Erdmann, which is a pretty high profile project. Mike, are you familiar with Tony Erdmann at all?
I am not, actually.
Okay, so Tony Erdmann is nominated for the Oscars this year for Best Foreign Language Film. It's a German movie. and I've seen critics talking about Tony Erdmann all year. It's supposed to be fantastic. I have not gotten the chance to see it yet, but it's a 2.5-hour German comedy about this daughter and her older father. And so Jack Nicholson presumably will be playing the older father. Apparently,
the daughter role.
It's a really interesting remake of Tony Erdmann.
Yeah.
No, the daughter is actually going to be played by Kristen Wiig, it looks like, which is pretty cool. And so this is a pretty high-profile project. It's pretty cool that this is happening. A lot of people are wondering why we need a remake of Tony Erdmann.
Yeah, consider it's out now.
Yeah, but, Americans won't watch foreign movies, Mike.
Yeah, no, it's true. This is pretty neat, I guess.
Yeah, it's neat. I think, and the critics that I've been following basically say, I would not be interested in a Tony Erdmann remake unless Jack Nicholson is in it.
That's fair, yeah. That's the thing. I can see that.
Apparently this role is perfect for Jack Nicholson, so that's pretty exciting, and I'm interested to see where that goes. And I do want to see Tony Erdmann at some point, too. I've heard it's very good, and has a good chance of winning the Best Foreign Language Oscar, although maybe not, because it's also nominated against The Salesman, the Oscar for Hardy film. So we'll see what happens there. It should be an interesting Oscar race, as it always is. The Oscars are always so fascinating, Mike.
There's so many actors there.
There are so many actors at the Academy Awards. do you want me to put this voice on for the rest of this
episode? Just be Pierce Morgan the whole time.
Oh, man. So, but in addition to all that, Mike, are you going to make a Pierce Morgan joke?
Was that... well, I was just going to say, then you could tweet out the link to the episode to him, and he'll retweet it in a hate tweet, and we'll get more listens than we ever get ever.
This is true. I may do that. I may just tell him, hey, Pierce Morgan, we're making fun of you. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, dare you to retweet us.
And he will probably tweet back at it, because he seems to retweet everybody who makes fun of him. And, comes back with, a semi-snarky comment that also is kind of like a self-own, almost. He doesn't seem to realize how much he owns himself when he's talking to people. Man, what a hateful person. Anyway, enough about Piers Morgan. There are some crazy directorial projects that were announced over the past couple of weeks, Mike. Some stuff that are from people that we really love and respect and, whose work we're really into. There's some amazing projects coming off the ground right now. And I think the big one that I'm pretty excited about, Nicholas Winding Refn, director of Drive, Only God Forgives, The Neon Demon, he is going to be directing a 10-episode Amazon series called Too Old to Die Young, and it's going to be a series about the criminal underworld of Los Angeles, produced by Ed Brubaker, another guy who we also really love.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a bunch of names and words that are my favorite things.
Yeah. It doesn't even have to make a coherent sentence. It's just all those words together.
Yeah.
Just something to really appreciate. So that would be really cool. And I'm excited to see Nicholas Winding Refn moving to television to do that kind of thing. I know Amazon was actually the production company or the distributor behind The Neon Demon. They've been distributing a lot of movies recently, actually, over the past 2 years or so. And what's cool about those is that once they're in theaters for a few months, they pop up on Amazon Prime for free.
Right.
So it's neat. So you can watch The Neon Demon for free on Amazon Prime right now if you want a taste of what this TV show will probably be like.
Interesting choice of taste, though. Interesting choice of words.
And it'll probably be weird. Take Away Titi, another director who I'm a big fan of. We talk about him a lot on the show. He's currently directing Thor Ragnarok. He's going to be directing a stop-motion animated movie based on Michael Jackson's chimp Bubbles.
Like, what? I mean, sure, I guess. Of anyone that could do it, I guess it's him. This sounds like a premise to a Tim and Eric sketch or something. I don't know what this movie's going to be.
Yeah, apparently it's a very good script. I guess it's a script that was on the blacklist 2 years ago or something. And he's taking it and making it into the stop-motion movie. So that's pretty wild. I'm excited to see what he can do in the stop-motion format. That's a format that I really love. I know Wes Anderson's actually making another stop-motion animated movie. In the near future. I think it's his next movie, too, which is great because Fantastic Mr. Fox is one of the best movies ever made.
Correct.
It is amazing. So I'm eager to see where that goes, because Taika Waititi is one of the best directors working today, I think. You know, he made What We Do in the Shadows, he did Hunt for the Wilder People, he's doing Thor Ragnarok. They actually just released a clip from a new Team Thor short.
Really?
Yeah, I guess there's another one that's going to be attached to the Doctor Strange Blu-ray. I think it's like a minute and a half clip. I don't know how long the short is. It'll probably be like 4 or 5 minutes. But it's like a minute and a half clip of Thor struggling to pay rent, and it looks awesome. It was very funny. So that's very cool. Taika Waititi doing Bubbles. I think it's going to have a really interesting sense of humor about it, too. Also, here's some pretty big franchise news coming out. We talked about the new Halloween remake that is being made a while back, right?
Sure. I don't remember.
you have such a vague memory. Okay, well, all right. So I think this was back in, like, June. We talked about this, so it's fair that you would have forgotten this by now. A while back in, like, June, it was announced that John Carpenter was going to be producing a new Halloween movie.
Yes, I do remember this now. Okay.
And it's going to be made under Blumhouse, who do a lot of the low-budget horror movies, like Paranormal Activity, Insidious, The Visit. I think they did Split also. Now, it looks like that has a director attached to it, and back then we thought it was going to be Mike Flanagan, that was the rumor, who was the director of Hush and directed Ouija 2, which I've heard is very good. That looks like it's not the case anymore, that didn't happen. Instead, David Gordon Green and Danny McBride are making a new Halloween movie for Blumhouse.
I can't. That's such a weird combination.
That is insane. And I mean, so David Gordon Green and Danny McBride have worked together a few times. David Gordon Green has had such an eclectic career. He first came on the scene with this drama in the year 2000 called George Washington. And then a few years later, he directed Pineapple Express.
Right.
And he's kind of like switched back and forth between like really weird, like raunchy comedies like that and Your Highness and The Sitter. I believe he works on Eastbound and Down as well, and a bunch of stuff like that. So he and Danny McBride have a pretty good working relationship. But he's also done movies like Joe with Nicolas Cage, which is supposed to be a very good drama. He did Our Brand is Crisis 2 years ago with Sandra Bullock. Okay. And so now he and Danny McBride are doing this Halloween movie together, and John Carpenter, the iconic horror director and director of the original Halloween, took to Facebook to announce this, and he said this: "So you say you want a revolution. You want to shake things up and bring back Halloween and make it rock again? Well, so do I. So here's the announcement you've all been waiting for. David Gordon Green and Danny McBride are joining the project to complete the creative team. David and Danny will write the script together, and David will direct. I will continue in my executive producer role to consult and offer my advice and feedback as needed. David and Danny both came to my office recently with Jason Blum and shared their vision for the new movie, and wow, they get it. I think you're going to dig it. They blew me away. I might even do the music. Maybe. It could be kind of cool. And you'll get to see it in theaters on October 19th, 2018.
I mean, like, sure. That's a pretty fucking exciting Facebook post.
Yeah, it is. I mean, David Gordon Green's a cool director. Danny McBride writing this thing. Danny McBride's also in the cast for the new Alien movie. Which is,
I don't think I knew that.
I guess you didn't know that, but he is. So maybe he's like making the rounds of all his old favorite horror movies or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but, I mean, if I could, I would.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. So that's pretty cool. And the fact that John Carpenter may even do the score for this movie is pretty insane.
That's huge. Yeah.
That's as exciting as David Gordon Green and Danny McBride being attached to this, I think. And supposedly this movie's going to take place right after the events of Halloween 2. Or it's basically going to ignore every Halloween sequel, and it's going to be like picking up right where Halloween 2 left off.
Okay.
And those are both the John Carpenter Halloween movies. John Carpenter directed the first one, and I don't think he directed the second one, but he was kind of like an uncredited behind-the-scenes director or something. I'm not really sure how that works. It's going to ignore every other Halloween sequel, including the Rob Zombie remakes and everything, and just kind of focus on that continuity. It's taking the Superman Returns approach.
Yeah.
To the Halloween continuity, which is interesting.
I mean, that's probably the best option when it comes to the Halloween franchise, to just ignore the ones that are, well, the third one, which is not about Michael Myers, right. And then the other ones where he's a god, I guess. I mean, he kind of is in the other ones. But.
Right, yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, I feel like with the Halloween movies, you shouldn't really be beholden to any kind of continuity anyway. You know, I feel like you can just make a Halloween movie without any, like, necessarily any ties to the original or anything like that. But if you're going to do it, I think this is probably the way to do it, so you're not tied down with so much other continuity and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And this is something that I remember Neil Blomkamp was talking about trying to do that with his Alien movie, right? That was going to ignore Alien 3 and Alien 4, and it was just going to be Alien, like, right after Aliens. And I remember Jurassic World did that, too. It was supposed to ignore Jurassic Park 2 and 3, or at least it didn't mention that they happened. Although, if those movies did happen, I doubt that park would still be open by the time Jurassic World... exists. You know, when dinosaurs attacked San Diego or whatever it was, San Francisco.
Oh my god! Yeah, in the second one.
I can't imagine that park was still allowed to be open if Jurassic Park 2 actually happened in that universe.
Probably not.
But anyway, let's get off Halloween because there is another project that's coming out, and there's some pretty big news about this. Mike, are you a fan of Kevin Smith?
Yeah,
me too. I would say I used to be. Like, when I was like a teenager, I loved Kevin Smith. He was like a formative director for me. I obsessed with his movies and stuff. Clerks was one of my favorite movies of all time. It still is. I have been less on board with his work over the past few years, and I'll talk about one of those in my discussions today. But apparently, Kevin Smith is working on a new Jay and Silent Bob movie.
I mean, I'm in. Yeah, I think.
He's calling it Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, and it's going to be about like Hollywood's obsession with reboots and like kind of how it's not original anymore and all that kind of stuff. It's, you know, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back was a Hollywood satire where they kind of went through Hollywood and stuff, and it was about the internet and how the internet has changed how movies are made and stuff, and superhero movies, right, and all that. So this is going to be about reboot culture and all that stuff. And it looks like Clerks 3 and Mallrats 2, which are both projects that Kevin Smith has talked about for a long time, are no longer happening, at least for now.
I'm not really sure, because I saw the Instagram post that he made that was showing him starting to write this.
Yes.
And he, I think it said, like, no more Clerks 3, no more Mallrats, Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, or something like that.
Yeah, apparently. So Mallrats 2 was going to be a TV show, right, and he was shopping that around to different networks, and nobody was picking it up, which is kind of surprising to me. I feel like that should have been an easy pickup.
Yeah.
Like, somebody would pick that up, you know? There's got to be so many, like, streaming services or channels or something. You know, I feel like that's like a Netflix thing, or even if Netflix thinks they're too good for it. Like, that's a Crackle thing or something. Like, it's got to exist.
Yeah, there's an audience for that.
There's got to be an audience for it. And then Clerks 3, apparently what happened is that one of the four main leads dropped out, and so he can't do it anymore. And so I got to imagine that's Rosario Dawson.
Like, I would assume.
Because she's the only movie star. she's the only star out of that four. Although Jeff Anderson, who plays Randall, has always talked about being kind of like uncomfortable with acting. It might have been him too. Who knows?
Maybe.
In any case, so Clerks 3 and Mallrats 2 seem to be dead for now, at least. But Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, and I don't know. I liked Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back a lot back in the day. I have not watched it in probably like 5 years, and I don't know how I would react to it anymore. Yeah. I remember there were a lot of like American Pie jokes. You know, they're very like very specific 2001 era references that I don't think have probably dated well. There's like Dawson's Creek jokes and stuff like that.
There's a whole subplot about James Vanderbeek.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens with the Jay and Silent Bob reboot. I know he's also working on Moose Jaws, which will be the last movie in his True North Canadian trilogy, which again, I'll be talking about one of those movies in my discussions in just a little bit. I'm not as big on the True North trilogy as I am on the Viewisk universe, I can tell you that much. Although, to be fair, and actually to Kevin Smith's credit, he thought of the shared universe concept before anybody else did. You know, the Viewisk universe, those six movies all take place in the same universe. Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Dogma, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and Clerks 2.
That's true.
They all have like characters crossing in between different movies. Jay and Silent Bob appear in every movie. And there's like in-jokes and references to each movie. So he did the universe thing before Marvel did, to his credit.
Yeah. They stole it from him.
They did. I mean, he did it on a much smaller scale. There's less explosions in Kevin Smith movies.
That we know about.
Yeah. Well, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back has at least a couple, I think, now that I'm thinking about it. But anyway, so that's Kevin Smith working on the Jay and Silent Bob reboot. And finally, last bit of film news, I promise. Last time we recorded an episode, we reported that Ben Affleck was no longer directing The Batman. And it looks like we have a director for Batman now. and that director is Matt Reeves, who's a great choice. I think he could probably pull off a great Batman movie. I just wish it wasn't under the current DC regime, who seems committed to putting out terrible movies. I mean, we'll see. You know, we'll see. I'm holding out hope. I think Matt Reeves can direct a great Batman movie. If you're not familiar with Matt Reeves, he directed the original Cloverfield. He directed Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which was awesome. And he's going to be directing War for the Planet of the Apes this year, which is coming out in July. And this is something that, like, I'm excited for what he will do with the Batman. I am hoping that this won't take him away from the Planet of the Apes franchise for a fourth one, if there is a fourth one.
Yeah, I know. I really hope War for the Planet of the Apes is really good, because Dawn was awesome.
Yeah, Dawn was fantastic, and War for the Planet of the Apes looks awesome, so pretty stoked for it. But also, in regards to the Batman, there's a new rumor going around that Ben Affleck may want out entirely.
That poor guy.
Yeah. And I got a feel for him a little bit, you know, because he was talking about how frustrated he was when he was promoting Live by Night and all the press junkets just turned into questions about Batman. Like, I get it. But at the same time, like, you should have known what you were signing up for there. And also, who doesn't want to be Batman, you know? That's like the essence of pure adolescent male fantasy. And he gets to be, like, he has the option to be Batman. Not very few people have the option to be Batman, right?
Yeah.
And he's throwing it away.
He's going to drop out just so he can play Green Lantern. That's really what it is.
That would be something. That would be that would be really interesting. That said, I mean, I get it, though, you know, because I don't, like, if you're Ben Affleck, I don't think you want to be told in your throughout your entire career that people liked the Lego version of Batman better than better than your current version of Batman.
Yeah, that's got to hurt that happens.
It's got to hurt at least a little bit. Anyway, that is it for film news today. We talked about a lot of stuff, crammed in a lot of film news there, but I think we did it in record time. So suck on that, Piers Morgan. and now we can move on into our discussions. Watch this. On my discussion, just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies we see. On my discussion, there is so much to see, you and me, so we're gonna talk about movies for our discussions. All right, it is time for discussions on Film Bookcast, but before we get into that, some late-breaking news just on Twitter, actually. This is happening in real time right now. This Joe Carnahan just tweeted this 6 minutes ago. The Raid remake will hew closer in tone to and feel to The Gray and Narc. Gareth Evans is producing alongside it, has given us his full blessing. And then, like 3 minutes later, somebody like tweeted at him, "Wait, are you directing or producing a remake of The Raid?" And Joe Carnahan responded, "Directing and producing." So Joe Carnahan, director of The Gray, The A Team, Narc, he directed Stretch, and he's going to be directing Bad Boys 3. That's his next movie. Is going to be directing a remake of The Raid, the crazy action movie directed by Gareth Evans. You're a big fan of The Raid, Mike. You've seen that, right?
Yeah, I really like The Raid, yeah.
Yeah, and apparently this movie will star Frank Grillo, who's a great character actor, in the lead role, which is pretty insane. Frank Grillo was also he was the star of The Purge 2 and 3. He was Crossbones in Captain America the Winter Soldier and Captain America Civil War. Right. So that is really interesting. That is really cool. I mean, I don't have a ton of thoughts about this right now because it just happened. Like, I'm still trying
just saw the tweet.
Still trying to process my mind around this, but you know, it's kind of fitting because we're talking about John Wick 2 today, and there's a comparison to be made between this movie and The Raid 2 in relation to John Wick and The Raid. Like, I feel like there's definitely something there to compare the two of them there. So that is really interesting. That's very exciting. And if there's any more updates about that, we'll talk about that in the next film bookcast, I guess. I see anything on Twitter and I'm like, hey, look at this.
We're going to interrupt our regularly scheduled broadcast to breaking news about The Raid remake.
Yes.
But I mean, sure, that seems cool. Like, The Raid came out, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, maybe. I guess
2012, I think, so about 5 years ago.
Let's remake it. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's The Raid is awesome. If you haven't seen The Raid, it's a really cool Indonesian action movie starring Iko Uwais. And The Raid 2, I think, is even better personally. Did you see The Raid 2?
Yeah, I have seen The Raid 2. Okay. I think it is an interesting comparison the way that you said that.
Yeah, because
between The Raid and John Wick, and then Raid 2 and John Wick 2.
Yeah, The Raid 2, I think, I mean, it just expands the scope of that movie. The thing about The Raid, to me, the story was very thin because it's basically. Because it's basically just, like, people kicking each other for 90 minutes. And that's fun. That's great. But The Raid 2 had the actual, like, a crime drama going on in the background. Right. It's much longer, though. It's kind of a toss-up. It's kind of a toss-up. But in any case, let's get off of that for now. Oh, look, Jason Isaacs is talking about appearing in Fantastic Beasts sequels. Look at that.
Ooh, look at that. Mike, get off Twitter. We're doing a thing.
All right. Let's get into our discussions, Mike. What do you have to discuss with us today?
So this week I have two discussions.
Wow.
Unfortunately, neither of them are the two movies I said I would discuss in the last episode.
Right. Last episode you said you would discuss Unbreakable and You're Next, and failed to watch both.
Yeah, instead, I'm going to talk about, first, a documentary on Netflix called Drunk, Stoned, Brilliant, Dead. And this is a documentary about the National Lampoon magazine and the history of that whole franchise and how it got started and where it's societal impact.
Okay.
So if you're at all interested, if you're a comedy nerd of any sort, and you're interested in where kind of modern comedy all came from, this movie is, or this documentary should be pertinent to your interests.
Absolutely.
And it is really interesting. They have they interview kind of almost everyone they could find that was directly involved with the National Lampoon magazine. And it's that they interview the guys that founded it, the manager that put up the money for them to start the magazine, and they have all the writers. And it gets into some really interesting stuff about the rivalry between National Lampoon's and SNL, which I thought was really fascinating.
Yeah. Well, SNL cribbed a lot of their guys from National Lampoon, right? Michael O'Donoghue was the big the big name on SNL, like not name, but like the kind of the big writer on SNL.
Yeah,
and he came straight from National Lampoon.
Yeah, they talk about how prior to that they had an off-Broadway ongoing show and a National Lampoon's Radio Hour, which had all of the guys from Second City were on in both of those.
Really?
And some guy from NBC called the owner of the magazine, whose name I can't remember, who's the guy that put up the money for them to start it.
Okay.
And said, hey, we're thinking about starting a variety TV show. Do you want it to, we want National Lampoon's involved. And at that point they were starting to get the movies together for Animal House and all these other things.
Right.
And he's like, we can't handle that. Don't know. We're out. And then a couple months later they stole all the Second City guys and were like, we're starting SNL. So it could have been the National Lampoon's Variety Hour or something like that in an alternate future.
That is insane.
Yeah. So it's pretty interesting. It interviews, you know, Chevy Chase and all those kind of guys are involved in it. Also, Kevin Bacon's interviewed, which is pretty funny. if you're interested in comedy history at all.
Absolutely. I'm a comedy nerd, so that definitely sounds like something I would enjoy. And if you love SNL, this is definitely something to check out as well. Or any of those National Lampoon movies, Animal House, Vacation.
Yeah. Right.
Van Wilder.
they even touch on those movies that are now like National Lampoon's in name only. I mean, the magazine doesn't exist anymore.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of it's National Lampoon as a brand name, really, but not like it's not none of the actual people who used to be involved in National Lampoon, and you know, it's just kind of like the words, like they mean nothing now. Like if you see a movie that is released today that's labeled National Lampoon something, it's probably terrible.
It's just like IMAX. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
So then that's the first movie that's available on Netflix. The other movie is Prisoners. It is directed by Denis Villeneuve. Came out in 2013, I believe.
I think Or maybe like 2012. It was around then, yeah.
Yeah. And it stars Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah. And it's a pretty grimdark, interesting movie about these two little girls go missing. Hugh Jackman and Terrence Howard's daughters go missing.
Okay.
And it's about kind of the fallout and what happens in their lives. And Jake Gyllenhaal plays the detective assigned to the case. And Paul Dano's in it. And he's amazing because it's Paul Dano.
Sure.
Yeah, and I mean, they all deliver really powerful, intense performances. It's Denis Villeneuve doing tension like only he can do. Deakins is the cinematographer, framing only like he can do.
Right. Now you've become a big fan of Denis Villeneuve over the past couple of years, right, with Sicario and Arrival.
And now that we know he's directing Blade Runner 2049.
I wish he was directing Blade.
I do that every time. Blade Runner 2049, and just recently announced that he's got he's attached to the Dune reboot,
which is nuts. That's crazy.
Which is a crazy thing that's happening. So since he's getting all the awesome sci-fi franchises, I figured, you know what, I'm a really big fan of Arrival and Sicario. I want to go back and watch as much of his stuff as I can. And I started with Prisoners because that was one of the most recent ones. And it's amazing. I think I can't remember the composer's name, but it's the same guy that did Sicario and Arrival.
Johan Johansson.
Yeah. How could I forget?
Is the name so nice you say it twice?
Exactly. him, Johan Johansson, Denis Villeneuve, and Roger Deakins together is like the holy triumvirate. They're amazing. Right. So I think I'm on board for all the Denis Villeneuve things.
Cool. Yeah, I've never seen Prisoners, and I would like to. I've seen Sicario and Arrival, and I saw his other movie, Enemy, with Jake Gyllenhaal, which came out around the same time as Prisoners, I think. And that movie,
it was the one between Prisoners and Sicario.
Yeah, that movie is weird as fuck. It is very strange. And I remember not liking it that much when I first saw it, but I think now that I'm kind of more attuned to Villeneuve's style, I might try to rewatch it at some point because I would like to give it another shot. But anyway, that is Prisoners, and that's, what was the name of the first movie?
Drunk, Stoned, Brilliant, Dead.
Drunk Stone, Brilliant Dead, and Prisoners. That one's available on Netflix. Where's Prisoners available? Is that just
It's places.
All right.
I'm going to assume it's on Amazon, but I didn't check.
Okay, cool beans. Anyway, I have a few discussions today as well. I did want to briefly mention the Arnold Schwarzenegger marathon, which I attended at the Alamo Drafthouse in Yonkers, which was a blast. It was awesome. If you loved Arnold Schwarzenegger, this is the place to be, man. It was an incredible marathon. They played 5 movies. They did not tell you what the movie was until the movie started rolling. So you wouldn't know what you're watching until the opening credits hit. Right. And in some cases, like, the first movie they played was True Lies. And as soon as the screen lit up and you're like, the first chord of the score hit, you heard people in the audience going fucking nuts.
That's amazing.
So that was pretty great. So the movies that they played were True Lies, The Running Man, Kindergarten Cop, Eraser, and Total Recall. And I had seen True Lies, Kindergarten Cop, and Total Recall. I had not seen The Running Man or Eraser, and I thought The Running Man was incredible. That movie was insane and awesome and really cool. And it also stars Maria Conchita Alonso, who it's also Alva from Vampire's Kiss. So that was neat. And also Eraser was a super fun movie. Have you seen Eraser, Mike? I think you mentioned that you did, right?
Yeah, I have seen Eraser, but it was a long time ago, and I just remember it being a, like, 90s action movie.
Yeah,
that's kind of all I remember.
I was kind of on the fence about it for, like, 40 minutes, and then suddenly there's this, like, insane sequence where Schwarzenegger is, like, jumping out of a plane, and it's, like, this whole parachute shootout thing. And then later on, he's in a zoo, and he has to basically... he's in a gunfight against an alligator, and it's fucking awesome. So that was cool, and yeah, it was awesome to see like True Lies and the Total Recall and stuff on the big screen. 35mm, they were all 35mm. Kindergarten Cop, I've never been the hugest fan of, but it was fine, you know.
Sure, why not?
It's fun to watch in that context, you know. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's all about the context there, and we also all received glasses that were inscribed with the opening words of The Running Man. Because The Running Man takes place in 2017 and it opens with a scroll that says, like, in the year 2017, humanity is, like, down to its last licks. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
And all that kind of cool stuff. And there was a big Arnold Schwarzenegger cake as well for his 70th birthday. So it was a lot of fun. Good marathon, quality times. I also went to the Rocky Marathon a couple months ago, and that was really a fun time, too. Next year is a Kurt Russell Marathon at the Draft House in Yonkers, so I'm looking forward to that.
We're going to have to do a special episode of the Film Bookcast on just that, because I got to go to that.
Yeah,
that
would be insane. We should broadcast live from the Kurt Russell Marathon. Why not?
We'll do a whole Periscope episode.
We could do a Mystery Science Theater episode, like a 10-hour Mystery Science Theater.
I'm in.
Oh, us like riffing Kurt Russell movies. I think it'd be a lot of fun. Although, at the same time, I'd want to just sit there and watch the movies because they're probably going to be awesome. So
yeah,
a lot of things to consider. But we got a year to figure it out.
Yeah,
so
we have a year.
We have time. The other two things I wanted to talk about. I saw Yoga Hosers this past week, and that is the new film from director Kevin Smith, who we just talked about in Film News, and it is the second in his True North Canadian trilogy. The first one was Tusk. And I was so dumbfounded by Tusk when I saw it way back in 2014. I was not sure what to make of it, and to an extent, I felt the same way here, though I'm more confident in saying that this one is bad.
Oh, what a shame.
I do admire the insanity behind this idea. Mike, do you know anything about Yoga Hosers?
No, I don't.
Oh, man, you are in for quite a description. So this movie stars Kevin Smith's daughter, Harley Quinn Smith, and Johnny Depp's daughter, Lily Rose Depp, reprising their roles from Tusk as two Canadian convenience store clerks. They team up with Johnny Depp's private detective, Guy Lapointe, to defeat Bratzies, which are little sausage creatures that are Nazis that are killing people by entering their assholes and eating them from the inside.
What? Are you sure this isn't a South Park bit?
This is a real movie that exists, and you can watch it on Netflix right now.
Oh my god.
I am not making up that description, and I really hope Kevin Smith has gotten this out of his system, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, when I saw Tusk, I feel like there was enough there that worked. Like, it's a solid body horror, like, almost like a parody of body horror stuff, almost.
Yeah.
It's a very strange movie, and it's not something that I felt like I liked that much, but I felt like I didn't dislike it. Like, so it was a very weird, like, in-between place. This movie has moments where I'm like, yeah, this is kind of funny, or, like, there's, like, things like that, but I think it's just so shoddily made, and, like, the Bratzies look terrible. Like, they're, like...
Yeah.
And then there's, like, just random stuff. Like, there's a part where they quote clerks for no reason other than just quote clerks. But there's a part where they're fighting the Bratzies, and Kevin Smith's daughter shouts, "I'm not even supposed to be here today!" And
Oh my god! I was gonna make that joke when you said that they're reprising their roles as Canadian convenience store clerks.
Yeah, no, he already made the joke.
Yeah, like they already made that movie.
Yeah, exactly. So it is a shame, and but I liked Harley Quinn Smith and Johnny Depp's daughter or Lily Rose Depp together. Like, they were solid, and you know,
yeah.
If you're a diehard Kevin Smith fan and you really feel like you need to watch this, more power to you. I am one of those people, so I felt like I needed to watch it. And I know at some point he's planning on making Moose Jaws, which I think is his next movie, if it's not Jane Silent Bob reboot. And the plot of that movie is that it's Jaws, but with a moose.
I mean, it's in the title, right?
It is in the title.
Now, that has the potential to be really funny and interesting, I think.
Sure. All these movies have the potential to be really funny and interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if I trust Kevin Smith to be that anymore. At least in these movies. As far as I'm concerned, he's kind of whiffed twice on this front. Maybe he can bring it back around for this last one. I don't know.
Well, who knows?
We will see. And then I also watched this movie called American Honey, basically the polar opposite of Yoga Hosers. This is a new film from director Andrea Arnold, who directed Fish Tank with Michael Fassbender. And this movie stars Sasha Lane, Shia LaBeouf, and Riley Coe. And it is a 2.5-hour odyssey reflecting on the recklessness of youth and how quickly it passes. It is incredible, man. This is, I think, one of the best films of last year. It got a lot of critical acclaim last year, but it wasn't playing near me because I live in a backwards hick town. I watched this and I was blown away. It looks amazing. The performances are fantastic. It instantly made its way into my top 10 list in the number 9 slot. So let's revise that old thing and add American Honey to the list, which kicks off 10 Cloverfield Lane. But sorry, Dan Trachtenberg, suck it.
Wow. Savage.
Telling everybody to suck it today. That's what it is. I'm tired, man.
Look what happens when you start fighting Piers Morgan.
I become Piers Morgan. Oh, man. So that's American Honey. I really, really enjoyed that movie. It was very, very good. And then lastly, I tried to go see the Lego Batman movie.
Tragic.
I tried to go see it, but I went to go see it, and I got in the theater, was able to watch about an hour of the movie, and then suddenly, without warning, the sound in the theater just cut out.
Disappeared.
Yeah, this is about two-thirds of the way through the movie, and the sound was gone, but the movie kept playing. I guess there was a power outage or something, and the theater, I guess a few of the theaters in there lost sound, but the movie kept playing, and I was thinking to myself, okay, well, if it comes back in, 30 seconds, then I'll just keep watching, and whatever. But time kept passing, and I was waiting for a good 5 or 6 minutes. Right. And at that point, I'm like, well, I've already missed a chunk of the movie. It's not a long movie. You know, it's a 90-minute movie. So I'm missing, you know, almost a tenth of the experience that I paid for. I'm thinking to myself, well, okay, I should probably just get up and go and, exchange it for another ticket or something. And they wouldn't give me a refund. I went up and asked them, hey, so can I get a refund or a free ticket or something? And they're like, well, we can't give you a refund if it's not our fault. And I was like, well, it's kind of your fault. Your theater stopped working.
Yeah, what?
and they were like, well, we'll give you a free ticket so you can use it next time. And I was like, all right, fine. Sure. I mean, that's fine because I go to the movies all the time anyway. So it's like, yeah, sure, I'll use a free ticket. But now I'm concerned because do I go see Lego Batman movie again and watch the first hour of the movie again just so I can see the last half hour? Or do I go see something else, you know?
It's tough. I mean, it depends on how good was that first hour.
It was pretty solid. You know, I enjoyed the Lego Batman movie from what I saw quite a bit. It has a very deep understanding of Batman and all of his iterations. So if you're a big fan of Batman, it's definitely worth checking out. I don't think it was as sharp as the Lego movie, though. I feel like that movie was so well done and so, interesting. It had a lot of layers to it, and there was just joke after joke. It was nonstop jokes, the Lego movie. And the Lego Batman movie is going for something different. I feel like it's a little more melancholy than the Lego movie is, oddly enough. But it's
even the Lego Batman's part of the Snyderverse.
But it's also hilarious. It's a really funny movie.
Okay.
And you know, I enjoyed the movie. I look forward to one day seeing the end of it. and it gets into some pretty crazy stuff. It goes into in the same way that the Lego movie was able to merge licensing IPs, the Lego Batman movie does the same thing. There's a pretty bonkers third act, or at least the beginning of the third act was pretty bonkers from the from the characters they were able to assemble for that. It was really, really fun. But from what I saw, I mean, Will Arnett is great as Batman as ever. You know, he was great in the Lego movie. He's great here. Michael Cera, perfect casting as Robin.
That's amazing.
I wish I could see Michael Cera as Robin in a live action Batman movie. I think he's amazing. Zach Galifianakis is a great Joker, and there's a scene. There's just so much stuff that is tailored right to me. Early on in the movie, Within seconds of the movie, it's just showing the studio titles, and you hear Will Arnett's Batman commenting on the studio titles. And it shows, DC, and it's like, oh, DC, the house that Batman built.
That's awesome.
And I was like, yes. And they're constantly making references to, past Batman stuff. So, early on in the movie, you see the Joker hijacking a plane, and the guy who's piloting the plane just kind of looks at him kind of bored, and he's like, "Aren't you scared?" And the Joker's like, "Aren't you scared?" He's like, "Well, no, I know Batman's going to stop you." And he's like, "What are you talking about? Batman never stops me." And the guy is like, "What about that time with the two boats?" Or or what about the time with the parade and all the Prince music? And there's a lot of stuff like that, which is really fun for hardcore Batman fans. So
yeah,
definitely worth checking out, especially if you love Batman. And one day I hope to see the end of the movie. We'll see if I see it in theaters or if I end up waiting for DVD, but I gave it a shot.
You tried. You tried.
I definitely gave it a whirl. But that is going to be it for our discussions, Mike. I think we should move on, right?
Yeah, it's only been an hour. We might as well get to the thing.
All right, let's do it. Let's get into our featured review of John Wick Chapter 2.
Welcome to Rome. Is this a formal event or a social affair?
Social.
How many buttons?
Two.
And what style?
Tactical.
Mr. Wick, do enjoy your party.
How good to see you again so soon.
You have no idea what's coming.
You want a war? Or do you want to just give me a gun?
All right, that was from the trailer for John Wick Chapter 2, written by Derek Kolstad and directed by Chad Stahelski. The movie stars Keanu Reeves as John Wick. Common is in this movie, Ian McShane, Lawrence Fishburne, Ricardo Scamarcio, Ruby Rose, John Leguizamo, and Lance Reddick, among others, are in this movie. The IMDb plot synopsis for John Wick Chapter 2 reads, after returning to the criminal underworld to repay a debt, John Wick discovers that a large bounty has been put on his life. So, pretty wild.
Good job, IMDb.
To be fair, there's very little story in these John Wick movies.
Absolutely. They have the thinnest veil of a plot.
Yeah, story definitely takes a backseat to the insane action these movies have to offer. So, Mike, we're both big fans of the original John Wick, right?
Yes.
We actually saw the movie together in theaters, if I recall.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty wild.
Close, like we used to live in the same place.
I know, right? So 2014's John Wick is one of the best action movies of the last few years. It's awesome. It's so stylish and so cool. And it was an excellent comeback vehicle for Keanu Reeves, who is an actor who I've always loved, but who doesn't appear in a ton of high-profile movies anymore.
Yeah. I think the Keanu's company and the Reeves Renaissance? Nope, that didn't work. I tried.
Keanu-sance.
There we go. Good job. is here now, I think, with John Wick and John Wick 2.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm thinking, I feel like, because between John Wick and John Wick 2, he didn't really appear in any big movies either. He appeared in a supporting role in The Neon Demon. He's been doing some smaller stuff here and there. I think what he's going to do is use these John Wick movies as his big star vehicle and use that kind of power, use that pull now that he has to try to get these smaller movies off the ground, which, I'd be into.
Sure.
I think it's a cool idea.
I think I just saw he's part of a cast for something about cannibals, but I can't really remember what the movie is.
The Bad Batch. Yes.
That was it.
The new film by Anna Lily Amapour. She's the director of A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. I've heard very good things about that, and I think this will be pretty cool, too.
Yeah.
I've already put the research in, Mike. Don't worry about it.
Good job. I know one of us is prepared.
So John Wick was directed by Chad Stahelski and David Leitch, those were the directors of the first film, and they were former stuntmen, right? That's kind of where the action from this movie comes from. They take so much great care in fight choreography and making sure the action is top priority. There are a few Hollywood movies in recent years that shoot action as well as these two John Wick movies, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It's really refreshing to finally have a movie that has a fight scene where the camera is, for the most part, stationary, and we get to watch the whole thing instead of zooming in on a fist and then card cutting away from it, and we don't know what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah, so this time around, Chad Stahelski is flying solo. David Leitch left the John Wick franchise to go make The Coldest City, which is a spy thriller being released this year with Charlize Theron and James McAvoy. So that sounds pretty cool. I'm looking forward to that. And he's also attached to direct Deadpool 2, which is very cool. Very excited about that. And Chad Stahelski stayed behind to make John Wick Chapter 2. He'll presumably direct a John Wick Chapter 3 if that happens. And he's also now attached to direct a new Highlander film. So...
What? That's amazing.
We talked about this on
the... I know we did. I know. But it's so crazy to hear.
It is pretty insane. The point is, the original John Wick made a pretty huge splash among action fans. You know, Keanu Reeves came back. These two directors, that was their first movie, and they are just blowing up. Like, they are getting attached to all these different projects left and right. So that is really cool. And we've been eagerly anticipating John Wick 2 for some time. Right, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. This is definitely when we first walked out of John Wick, we needed more of that insanity.
Yeah.
And we finally have it.
And I went to the Comic-Con panel for John Wick 2, which I talked about when we did our Comic-Con episode. And that was insane, man. People were so amped for this John Wick sequel. They showed the trailer for the first time at this thing, and it tore the roof off the place. It was nuts. That's also where they first revealed that Lawrence Fishburne was in the movie, which also tore the roof off the place, because that's like, you know, Lawrence Fishburne was in The Matrix with Keanu. It's a Matrix reunion. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So that is really cool. And so I think this new film, which is set just days after the original, does not disappoint in the slightest. And we talked about before, we were talking about The Raid, and I think the comparison is there with John Wick and The Raid and John Wick 2 and The Raid 2. You know, the first movie in both series is this, like, tightly constructed, tense action thriller.
Right.
And the sequel really expands the scope dramatically and gets just even more insane. Like, it seems like the point of the action scenes is just to be like, all right, what's the most insane thing we can do in this scenario? Let's do it.
Let's do it. Yeah, they both pick up pretty much immediately after the first one, I believe, if I remember The Raid 2 correctly.
Yes, I believe it does.
Yeah, so there is a lot of comparisons there. So that's interesting that is a thing. But yeah, I think I agree with you that John Wick 2 is just as much fun and probably more fun than the original John Wick.
Really, yeah.
It didn't let me down.
I've been arguing with myself about which one I liked more. Because I am so torn on this thing, and I love John Wick so much, and I love John Wick 2 so much, and I'm so torn on which one is better. Because on the one hand, I think the story for John Wick is stronger, the first John Wick. I think, you know, just the structure of that movie, it's a more tightly constructed story. But I think this story in John Wick 2 is more meaningful, and so it's really tough to really pinpoint. And like the directions that John Wick 2 goes is just really insane, and we'll talk about that in spoilers most likely. But as much as I love the action in these movies, and I do love the action so much, the thing that I love most about both these movies is the world that they have created. It is unlike anything that other action movies are doing right now. It is insane. The assassin underworld of John Wick is so fascinating and so well realized, and it's a perfect storytelling device because you're able to use it as a deus ex machina anytime you want. But it plays like a new discovery every time they do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's so true.
Anytime you want to get John Wick out of a jam, you're just like, oh, let's invent a thing that the assassin underworld has for him to use, and he can use it. Like,
and it works. Yeah.
Yeah, it really works. So that is really cool. And we're going to talk about a lot of the minutiae of this world in spoilers, I assume. We'll have to talk a lot. I think we'll have to save a lot of the stuff for spoilers. There's a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I think I had this thought in theater. I actually made this comparison that the amount of world building that goes on in John Wick and John Wick Chapter 2 is on par with Harry Potter world building.
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's insane. There's the moment when he walks into the Continental in Rome. He walks into the hotel. And it reminded me of the scene when they walk into the Ministry of Magic in New York in Fantastic Beasts. It has that same effect.
I can definitely see that, yeah. Definitely true. And obviously, the action in John Wick 2 is incredible, right? Like, I feel like that almost goes without saying at this point. But there is, like, full commitment to the insanity that's on display. And there are so many sequences that I'm still thinking about days later. Like, I saw this on Friday when it came out. You saw it yesterday. I'm still thinking about some of these action sequences and how cool they were and how they were able to do some of it. Like, it was just mind-boggling to me, some of the stuff. And I was genuinely shocked when the movie ended, partially because I was surprised by the direction the movie took in the end. But mostly because it fell so short to me. It is a 122-minute movie. I sincerely believe that only 40 minutes had passed.
We're only halfway through.
Yeah, I was like towards the end of the movie, I was getting an inkling that like the movie was ending, and I was like, wait, this can't be how it ends, right? Like, there's got to be so much more movie left. And then it cut to credits, and I was like, what? And then I checked the time, and it's like, it's been 2 hours? Which I think is a testament to how engrossed I was in this John Wickiverse.
I do think I had just watched on Monday night the first John Wick, and then I saw John Wick 2 Tuesday. Okay. It did feel a little same but different for some of the shootouts and action scenes.
Sure.
There's only so many times I could watch Keanu Reeves like judo take down a guy and then shoot him in the head. Like he does. I mean, it looks awesome. It's fun. It's exciting.
Sure.
But he kind of does the same thing every time. And it is interesting too, if you had seen any of the behind the scenes footage, or they had released some video of Keanu Reeves doing three weapon training on a shooting range between a handgun, the assault rifle, and a shotgun. That was for the first movie. And they used that technique in the second one. I remember there was a lot of hubbub and craziness over in that video when he gets to the shotgun portion or whatever. He loads a shell into the side of the shotgun instead of in the bottom. And they make a point to do that a couple times in John Wick 2.
Okay.
And it's just one of those cool things to see that, like, people... there was a big response to that on the internet from the first one. And they were like, let's fucking do it. And they just put it in the second one.
Very cool, yeah. And also, I was afraid of this. I was very much excited for John Wick 2. I was afraid that the supporting cast wouldn't live up to the first film, which had, you know, Willem Dafoe, Adrian Palicki, Dean Winters, and all of them were dead by the end of that movie, right? Alfie Allen, Theon from Game of Thrones was in it too. But I mean, you know, Common, Ruby Rose, Lawrence Fishburne, they all just really brought it in this movie. They were so much fun to watch, especially I think Common was just fantastic. Like, just a great foil for John Wick. Ruby Rose, great foil for John Wick, and like a really memorable character, I think, just the way, like, she's a mute character, so she speaks in sign language and all of her dialogue is subtitled, which I thought was really cool and really interesting. Of course, John Wick understands it because he understands everything.
Yeah, he speaks every language.
So that was very cool. And also, one of the things about this movie, it wears its cinematic influences on its sleeve. Like, very, from the outset, the very first image of this movie is a silent movie. I believe it's a Buster Keaton movie projected on a wall.
Yeah, I was gonna ask if we need to unpack that.
I think it's like sort of a mission statement almost. Like, it's saying, like, you know, back in those silent movies, like, there were so many crazy stunts that were kind of just done.
Yeah,
and they were done almost without thinking. You know, they were like real, like, all, like, oftentimes real dangerous stuff that was happening in these 1920s silent movies. And you know, there's like a comedic element to it, and most of those are comedies, and like, I think John Wick is taking a lot of stuff from those silent movies, like the way the action happens in those movies and the way they play some of the stuff for laughs. But even the poster of this movie, in which all of the guns are pointing at John Wick's face, that is a recreation of an old Buster Keaton poster.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
So that's neat. And, you know, there's other stuff. Like, there's a lengthy fight scene in this movie between John Wick and Common that reminded me so much of They Live.
I had the exact same thought. Yeah, I did think that was such a really interesting choice that, you know, we open with the establishing shot of New York and we kind of slowly pan down between two buildings to be seeing a Buster Keaton movie projected on the side of a building with the motorcycle crash happening. Yeah. And then we hear tires squealing and a motorcycle rips around the corner. Like, it's so awesome.
Yes.
And that fight with Common and Keanu Reeves of them falling down a staircase for 20 seconds.
Yeah, that was pretty great. And even like even Lawrence Fishburne's character just bears so much similarities to Morpheus from The Matrix. Like, it's actually insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean, he's like the king of the I shouldn't really get into the specifics of his character because I feel like there's a lot of spoilery stuff there. But I will talk about that in spoilers. I don't know. Is there anything else you wanted to say before we get into spoilers, Mike?
There was, and I can't remember it. Oh, the supporting cast, like you mentioned, I feel like this is kind of going to become the franchise that, like, everyone wants to be in, because they kind of already are. There's a ton of people in this movie.
Absolutely.
And there's so much potential for each location for there to be a whole new cast of well-known actors that we see that inhabit this building.
Yeah, and every time you add one, it expands the world, which is one of the big things about these movies.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really exciting, and it's cool to see that, you know, Keanu is having kind of like the Liam Neeson renaissance of the action of the Taken stuff that we saw.
Yeah, in movies that are much better than Taken, I would
say. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
To be fair, Liam Neeson did make The Gray, and that movie was awesome.
That was a pretty good one.
So was Nonstop. But, should we move into spoilers, Mike?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do that. Let's move into spoilers for John Wick Chapter 2, starting right now. All right, so spoilers for John Wick Chapter 2, starting right now. Okay, so everyone in New York is secretly an assassin. Got it.
Yeah, you didn't get your assassin phone when he came to visit?
I guess not. At some point, I felt like literally, there are parts of the movie where, like, they're fighting in New York, and you'll see people will flee the scene.
Yeah.
But I assume they're fleeing to go get their guns so that they can join the fight or something.
It was that one of the things that I had the thought of, like, oh, yeah, this is a pretty accurate representation of the subway, where there's this knife fight on a subway car, and no one flinches.
Yeah.
No one makes any kind of move.
No one is moving, and it's kind of great. Yeah. And so that is neat. And I gotta say, I was genuinely shocked by the movie's ending, in which John Wick kills Santino on continental grounds.
Yeah.
And so Santino is kind of the overarching bad guy of this movie. And that ending works so well because of how well realized this world has become over two movies. You know, we saw what happened to Adrian Palicki in the last movie when she killed somebody on continental grounds. Right. She died. They killed her. Like, the rule, and that rule is repeated a few times throughout the movie when he's in the continental in Europe. They're like, hey, take your business outside or all that stuff. And so there's this kind of assassin salute at the end of the movie, which is all different kinds of cool, where all the assassins that, like, John Wick goes to meet Ian McShane, and Ian McShane's like, you're excommunicated, John Wick. You can't be part of the assassin group anymore.
And, right.
Which is the official title, I believe, the assassin group.
That's the third movie. That whole John Wick 3, you're excommunicated from the Assassin's Group.
That's the full subtitle.
Full subtitle.
And so he's saying, like, you're excommunicated, but he's gonna give John Wick an hour head start, and all the assassins, like, everybody who's in the plaza turns out to just be an assassin. And it's like a huge crowd of people. And he, like, gives a signal, and they all just stand there for a second and say, like, just kind of stare at him, and they all keep walking. And it's like this really quick assassin salute almost, which I thought was very cool. So John Wick is excommunicated. He and his dog go on the run. And then the movie ends. And I was like, what? Give me John Wick 3, like, right now. Like, that's basically how I felt coming out of the movie.
Yeah, I do appreciate how many things that are throwbacks or references to the first one. We get the repeat of the pencil story, which we then get to see happen, which was exciting.
Yes, that was beautiful.
And then we get the Jimmy, the cop, that comes up when his house is on fire in this one, was the guy that showed up after the shootout in the first one. And if you notice that place, that fountain in Central Park where John Wick meets Winston, Ian McShane, is the place where they killed Adrian Palicki's character in the first movie.
I thought it might be, but it had been a little while since I've seen the first movie.
Yeah.
So,
so it is interesting. I did like those touches. And we get more John Leguizamo, which is always fun, as, like, the chop shop guy.
Right, yeah. And he's more of a cameo in this movie than he does in the first one, I think.
In the first one, yeah.
So that's cool. And, yeah, like, all these people, like John Leguizamo and, like, Thomas Sadowski, who plays the cop, like, it all kind of helps fill out the world because they're, like, popping up and, like, we've seen them from the first movie. We know them. Like, cameoing, and they're playing, like, it's basically a very similar situation when John Wick needs them in this movie than in the last one. So it's like, oh, hey, yeah, of course he would go to these guys, and it's cool. And I would say probably the highlight of the movie for me is that fight between John Wick and Common after Santino puts a contract on John Wick. So it's right when he gets to New York City. There's this very passive-aggressive silencer fight.
Yeah.
that is incredible. Probably one of the funniest scenes in the movie is when they're just walking down, like, Common's on, like, the high ground, John Wick's on the low ground. They're both just, like, shooting twice each time with the silencer on in, like, this crowd of people just kind of, like, walking. Like,
yeah,
just walking
just
through
in
this.
Step with each other.
Yeah, so that was pretty wild. And, like, there's the whole fight on the subway. There's the perfect Keanu one-liner right there. Earlier in the movie when John Wick and Common share a drink, Common pays for a drink, Common says, consider that a professional courtesy. And so when John Wick stabs him and... and warns him that if he takes the knife out, his aorta will burst. He says, consider that a professional courtesy. And I'm like, yeah, man.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I think my favorite part was the catacomb shootout.
That was pretty incredible.
After the job.
Yeah, the way that happens is like this. That's like 20 to 30 straight minutes of action right there. Because he's doing the job, right? The woman kills herself before John Wick gets a chance to kill her, which is also a phenomenal scene. And it's like also kind of like a beautiful, like artistic scene. I feel like it's not something that you'd see in like a typical action movie. And so there's that there's a shootout leaving a concert, right? Which leads into a shootout escaping the party, which leads into that shootout in the catacombs. And it's all in a row, and the action is relentless.
Which leads into the first part of the fist fight with Common.
Yeah, that leads directly into the Common fight, the first Common fight. Yeah, it is insane. And there's just like small stuff peppered throughout, especially like in that fight. Like when Wick is firing off a shotgun and he runs out of ammo, so he pins the guy down with the shotgun so he can reload it and then shoots the guy point blank.
Yeah, there's all sorts of crazy things. The first fight, the shootout leaving the concert was one of the moments where I was like, this is same but different for the first one.
Yeah.
Because we get the shootout in the rave in the first movie.
Right.
And it feels very similar to this one where we're having a shootout in the middle of a crowd at a concert. That said, it's still exciting and awesome. It's still fun to watch.
Yeah.
But then it leads into the catacombs part, which is, I think, my favorite shootout because of insanity. And he's doing that thing, pinning people to the ground with his empty gun. He's reloading the shotgun from the side. I did appreciate the introduction of the like bulletproof suit because it allows that
he can get hit and it's fine.
Basically. Yeah, I mean it is a Deus Ex Machina and it's insane, but it is a interesting way. Like we get to see him be even more tactical. Like when he throws the suit over his head and runs it and uses it as a shield. It's really cool. And it does add some more realism for him to actually get hit because, there's five guys with automatic weapons shooting at him. Like, someone's probably going to hit him.
Yeah, at some point, you would think.
At some point.
Like, he is John Wick, so you can kind of, say, he's John Wick, so he's not going to get hit. But
yeah, it is an interesting take, though. I appreciate this choice for the action star to actually get shot and wounded a whole lot. Because a lot of times everyone's from the Stormtrooper Academy and no one ever hits anybody.
Right.
But so this world in which everyone in New York is an assassin, some of them are competent a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And when Santino takes out the contract on John Wick, we see how contracts get put out. That was incredible.
Was another moment that was like, this is Harry Potter. This really weird old school 1950s tech with switchboards and typewriters.
Yeah, it's like
everyone in glasses and rockabilly stuff.
It's like a whole network of telephone operators who are just like, okay, you want a $7 million contract in John Wick? And they hold please. And they do the whole phone switching thing. And they send out like text to every assassin in New York City. And it is pretty nuts. And then you see John Wick entering New York City, and it's a really interesting way to shoot this. He's like, it shows you like kind of like three or four different fights at once, like kind of cross-cutting between these different fights. So it just shows you like, yeah, John Wick got into these fights, but we're not going to show you them one at a time because that would take a really long time. So we're just going to show you them cross-cutting all at once, and it is pretty cool. And that leads into the next fight with Common, which is also awesome.
It did remind me of like in Jupiter Ascending, where we take that 8-minute Brazil homage reference break, where we get to see that like the bureaucracy of them applying for. It kind of made me think of that when we get to cut to them putting out the contract. But it also sort of had that sequence of them intercutting all the fights together. Kind of made me think of the Warriors in some way, like him literally fighting his way through New York to get to the safe place.
Yeah, I can see that. I can very much see that.
It ties back to the thing you talked about earlier, where this movie does not shy away from what it's referencing, from what its influences are.
Definitely. And we should talk about Lawrence Fishburne in this movie, who is the king of the homeless people, I guess. Like the way that happened, like John Wick is on the run. I think he's running from somebody, like another run. Round of assassins.
It's right after Common, yeah.
Is it Common that he's running from? No, this is after he killed.
He stabs Common.
He doesn't kill Common, which we should note. He doesn't kill Common, so the Common can come back in John Wick 3, I assume.
But then there's two more guys that look like janitor people in the subway that start chasing him right after that fight.
Yes, yeah, that's definitely what it was. And then he's like running through the subway. He sees a homeless guy, gives the homeless guy one of his gold coins or whatever. and says, like, take me to see the homeless king or something. And I forget his name. And he, like,
I don't think we even get his name.
I'm not sure we do, yeah.
I don't remember.
And he gets like, under a newspaper and hides himself. And then the homeless man, like, leads him to Lawrence Fishburne's character. And I mentioned before that he's very similar to Morpheus. You know, Keanu has to be taken to him. Like, it's not just – it's this very special thing where he's, like, the king of this community. And Keanu has to be taken to him. And he's led there. And also, like, he's – like, Lawrence Fishburne's character is constantly talking about the choice that John Wick has to make and all this stuff. And it's like, whoa, he's Morpheus, but he's a homeless person and he has pigeons.
Yeah, it's still my fan theory that this is all a training program for Neo. It still stands. It still works.
You think at the end of it'll be like the end of Newhart, where Bob Newhart wakes up and it's the Bob Newhart show. You think at the end of John Wick 3 or 4 or something, John Wick will wake up and he'll be Neo and he'll be like, whoa.
Yeah, he'll wake up and say, I know Kung Fu. It'll be that scene.
I gotta be honest, I would kind of love that.
That would be amazing.
It would pull a split. It would be a stealth sequel to something.
Yeah.
That's going to be the new trend now. Now that M. Night Shyamalan did that, everything's going to be a stealth sequel to something else.
Yeah.
And it's going to be nuts, and it's going to get way out of hand, but I'm all on board if John Wick's the sequel to The Matrix. But yeah, and so I do want to talk about the opening of the movie too, which sees Wick getting his car back from the first movie, which is pretty neat, from the brother of Michael Nicklaus' character from that movie, and his brother's played with Peter Stormare, which is cool. And then it's just an incredible reintroduction to the movie style. It's like, you know, before the opening titles hit, it's this great car chase with Wick fighting the motorcycle, and it's like that is so. Like, I feel like it cements the movie right away when it's like that motorcycle chase and you're watching the motorcycle kind of like weave in and out of all these different traffic things. And you see the car like kind of behind the motorcycle, not really like following him and going a different route. And then the motorcycle just like is going down this alleyway and kind of looks behind him. And then he crashes right into the car because it's right in front of him now.
Yeah. Yeah, I did really like that inclusion of car chases, because there aren't – I think there may be one in the first one at the end on the docks.
Yeah, the end of John Wick is a car chase.
And this one, the whole movie's about a car, the first one, kind of. So I did like that, like that they are branching out into other kinds of, you know, typical action stuff. So we do get – that is a really sweet car chase, and there's car action in the –
in that
warehouse.
Yeah, in the opening sequence, there's like bits where there's a guy on a motorcycle and Wick opens his door and the guy on the motorcycle like slams into it and goes flying, and it's great. Just so much cool stuff. So much beautiful violence in this in this movie. And like, you know, my mom's a big fan of like action movies, but she doesn't like violent movies, and so there's a fine line. I don't think she would like John Wick.
Yeah,
because there's definitely violence. But it's so interesting because I think it takes place in such a fantastical, like, alternate universe almost. Like, it feels like this very heightened sensibility of violence. And so it's weird, because I've seen people that, you know, have written articles about the politics of John Wick and how, well, it's kind of uncomfortable that people are just shooting all these firearms in these very crowded, you know, areas in, you know, today's current climate, which is decidedly anti-gun, I would say. And I would say, like, I get that, but at the same time, John Wick takes place in this weird alternate universe where like people will see that and barely even register it. Like people will flee, but at the same time, they're probably also assassins. And
right. Yeah, that is a really good point. Actually, that scene in Central Park, when everyone stops in the plaza, I don't know how many people that is, but it's a lot. Everyone is an assassin in New York.
There's a lot. And there's like a scene that like during the shootout with Common, I think the second time around, they're at a fountain. And the fountain goes up, like the water starts spraying upwards. And so John Wick and Common just start shooting blindly into the water.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my God, if this was any other movie, I would be very uncomfortable. But it's John Wick, so.
Yeah, that scene was really cool. That reveal, they're walking, you know, of John Wick walking and the fountain stops and the water drops and Common standing right there.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. That was just really cool.
Very good stuff. Yeah. So other stuff. What else in this movie did you want to talk about? Any other scenes that stood out to you, Mike?
The final shootout kind of in the Museum of Modern Art.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In the Hall of Mirrors.
His big fight with Ruby Rose.
Right.
Which is also great. And I love her, like, John, I'll be seeing you kind of thing.
Yeah.
She said that, I think, twice throughout the movie. That's kind of her. And it's always in sign language. And he's like, yeah, sure. And he keeps walking. But yeah, so I think, and she's basically dead at the end of the movie, right? Like, she's,
I would think so, yeah.
Okay, like I feel like Common, they left alive so he can pop up again in John Wick 3. I assume. Like, I assume he'll pop up in John Wick 3. I hope he does, because he's great.
I hope so.
Because I think he was probably my favorite character, but I loved Ruby Rose in this movie, too. And really, Ruby Rose has been popping up in a lot of, like, the last, like, 3 or 4 weeks, she was in XXX3, she was in Resident Evil The Final Chapter, and now she was in John Wick 2. So she's, like, killing it in the action movie department right now.
I mean, yeah, I was wondering if that was actually her in the fight scene, which I guess it is. If I didn't, I forgot she was in all those other action movies.
Yeah, I could be. Yeah, I really don't know much about it, but yeah, so that's really cool. And she's she was great in XXX3, by the way. Also, I did not see Resident Evil: The Final Chapter because I have standards.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. I did go to see XXX3, so you know, yeah. maybe not the highest standards, but standards nonetheless.
But standards, yeah. I do like one of our favorite things about the John Wick movies is that they are so stylized, and that fight in the mirror room, Hall of Mirrors or whatever, is really interesting in the, like, they use the, like, they film it from the ground, like, pointing at the ground up for a section of it, because they're like watching it in the floor, in the mirror on the floor, and it just allows them to do such really interesting things to mess with perspective and mirror shit.
Absolutely, mirror shit. Yeah, there is so much creativity on display in the action of John Wick Chapter 2, and it is truly something not to be missed, I think, by anybody with even like a passing interest in these kind of action movies. I hope to see it at least one more time in theaters. And the more I write and the more I talk about it, like, the more I think it may be like the best action movie since Mad Max: Fury Road. Like, I feel like that was the last time an action movie got me like this energized. And there have been really great ones. You know, there was Mission Impossible: Rogue Nation, Captain America: Civil War was great, and you know, all that kind of cool stuff. But I feel like this was just so good. And I should say I was a big fan of XXX3 as well. That was a lot of fun.
I did see someone make the bold claim that it's the best R-rated action sequel since Terminator 2. It's pretty close, I think.
Damn. Yeah. I mean, I think the John Wick pantheon of action films, I feel like the John Wick movies have really made a name for themselves. And I think that's very cool. Actually, there's this great column that's been running in the AV Club for the past year or so called A History of Violence. And basically, this column is going through the entire history of action movies year by year and writing about, like, every column is about the most important movie of that year. And so it started out in 1968, where they decide that that's the birth of the modern action movie with Bullet. But most recently, they talked about 1994, where the action movie was Speed. And so obviously I'm a big fan of Speed. And in the article, they mentioned that Keanu Reeves is one of the great action stars of all time. And that he will be appearing in the column, a total of 3 times. And so you got to imagine The Matrix, you know, easily. And then John Wick, probably 2014.
Yeah.
John Wick has to be, John Wick Chapter 2 continues the pantheon. Yeah. Keanu Reeves, one of the great action stars. I mean, like I said, Speed, The Matrix, and the John Wick movies, Point Break, Man of Tai Chi. Have you seen Man of Tai Chi?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man, it's so good. It's the movie that he directed.
I remember hearing about it.
Yeah, and he plays the villain, and it's like a cool martial arts movie. I think Chad Stahelski might have actually done the stunts for that movie, too. But yeah, a lot of cool stuff there. So anyway, I think we've maybe run the course in John Wick 2. We could probably just gush about the action sequences for another hour or so. But
Go ahead.
I was going to ask, is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
I do think it is interesting, though, just to bring it back to The Raid again, that the John Wick and The Raid both kind of have brought the gun fu. I mean, I guess John Woo kind of started that.
Sure.
But they brought it to the less stylized version. Like, it's much more about what's going on. Like, the camera isn't shaking. We're not dealing with Paul Greengrass stuff.
Yeah, no, the gun fu, I think, is a huge part of this. And I think it's really interesting. Yeah, John Woo did a lot of gun fu. And I'm going to try to think of another thing that rhymes, but John Woo did a lot of gun fu stuff, and The Raid was a big gun fu thing. But I think John Wick has really like popularized it as a form of action entertainment. Yeah. Like it's this mix of karate and martial arts, but also gunplay, and it's really effective and really cool. I think The Matrix is probably not like John Wick style gun fu, but it's definitely like I think on the level. Almost like it's definitely a factor in there. But yeah, so John Wick Chapter 2, aces. Across the board, big fan. The more I talk about it, like in this discussion, the more I feel like I love it. Like
I think I came into this episode like almost lukewarm. Like I had a lot of fun; it was exciting. I did feel like they repeated some stuff that was a little disappointing, Because you always want to see new innovations and exciting things like that. But talking about it with people that love it, it brought it. I'm up on it again.
Way up. Yeah. John Wick 2, aces across the board. Big fan. I hope to see it one more time before it leaves theaters. But Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Plus, you can now find some of my writing at thecrookedscoreboard.com, where I've been writing some humorous pieces. I think they're humorous anyway. I wrote a piece a couple weeks ago about what movies have told us about the horrible dystopian future that we see ourselves in. That's fun. That's a fun read for people. and recently, this actually just went up yesterday, I wrote a piece about I wrote 7 foreign movies that could be improved by adding Matt Damon in honor of The Great Wall being released this week. So definitely check those out if you haven't read them yet. And if you haven't read them yet, what are you doing? Come on. Come on. It takes you 2 minutes.
Pause the podcast. Go read it and come back for the last 30 seconds.
Exactly. Thank you for listening to Film Bookcast. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike's pre-show. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we appreciate so many different ones hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks when we'll probably be discussing the new horror satire and directorial debut from Jordan Peele, Get Out. I've seen some pretty good reactions coming out of this movie, Mike. I don't know if you've seen any reviews.
No, I haven't.
Okay, it played at Sundance a couple weeks ago, and supposedly it's very good, and I'm eager to, like, the trailer just makes it look really interesting and really unique. I feel like there's not that many horror satires that exist. And I mean, there are horror satires, absolutely, but I feel like satire is something that people associate with comedy.
Yes.
And so in order for you, to see a mainstream horror movie getting this kind of push and has such a satirical light to it, I think it should be really interesting. Yeah. And you can check out our next Complete Works, where we're going to be entering the new millennium and talking Nicolas Cage's role in Gone in 60 Seconds. So that should be exciting. I actually watched the original Gone in 60 Seconds because I am a professional, Mike. That is what I will choose to say, and not that I was super bored and I had to kill time before Sentinel Live started, but
definitely not that.
So that'll be really cool. That'll be interesting. And thank you guys so much for listening. We are out.